Lord, it's your Sabbath and you've asked us to keep it holy, so we gather here today to worship you and give you praise. And we ask, Lord, that everything we do here can be for you, that your Spirit can fill our hearts, that your word will be on our lips, and Lord, that we can worship the Father today in spirit and in truth. So unite us today as a church here, and let us worship you today with all love and honour and praise. In his name we pray. Amen. I don't know about you, but when I was a kid, we would go on holidays. And, it's a lot of fun getting in the back of a car with your mum and dad in the front. And when you're a kid, everything is fine and safe and nothing can go wrong. And everything's fantastic. And when I was a kid, it was that way as well. Mum was the navigator and dad was the driver. And, you know, mum took pride in her navigation. And this was in a day before GPS, right? Who remembers those days? Who's got a GPS? Anyone got a GPS? Three or four of us. The rest of you know where you're going, don't you? Well, look, before GPSs came, and they had map books, the Gregories, maybe you call it. Maybe you've still got a Gregories in your car. Yeah, I've still got a bunch of maps in my boot as well. But, you know what, it's a bit hard just to look at the Gregories while you're driving without someone to navigate. So my mum was the navigator and my dad was the driver. And you know what? That's kind of fun, you know, navigating with a map. Whatever you're doing, whether you're driving or even the pathfinders do it, it's a lot of fun. You find where you are, you find where you've got to go, and you get to decide the course that you're taking. You get to look at this map, and, you know, this is a sheet of paper, but it could contain all kinds of adventures and mysteries. You don't know what's going to lie between you and your destination. And it was great. She would have this commanding voice, turn left up here, turn right there, and we felt secure with the world as kids. Everything was fine. We would get where we were going, unless it went wrong, which happened occasionally because, you know, maps aren't always perfect, and sometimes you don't, you know, get a new map, and the map book could be several decades old, and so when it went wrong, it was all bad, because all of a sudden, Mum said it was my dad's fault for taking the wrong turn. And Dad said it was Mum's fault for being a bad navigator and directing him on the wrong street. She said, well, the book didn't say it was a one-way street. And Dad said, well, come on. Anyway, GPS should have solved all of our problems, shouldn't it? You'd think so, right? But it really didn't. Because even the GPS that we've got, and Vanessa and I got a GPS when we were at college, and it was fantastic. You know, we thought we were the height of technology. And we would go out for this drive. We wouldn't bother trying to remember where we went. We would just go drive and get lost. And then we'd have a picnic and we'd pull out this GPS and put in our home and it would safely take us home. What a fantastic invention. We thought it was perfect until the day it tried to drive us off a cliff, because we were up the top of some mountains and we were following the GPS and it said continue on for 400 metres. But we were pretty sure that in the next 10 metres there was a giant cliff and a fence and a sign and the road veered to the left. But we couldn't understand it. Well, how can the GPS have gotten this wrong? Well, because it's technology. Technology is programmed by people and people get things wrong. Do you think we drove off the cliff? No, right? We decided to follow the evidence of our eyes and we turned left and thankfully survived that trip. Getting lost is not fun though, because all of a sudden we didn't know where we were. If the GPS doesn't know where we are, we don't know where we are. So we were lost and it took us about an hour to find our way out of these mountains. Turns out GPS doesn't work very well in some mountains. So you should know that if you ever get a GPS. Have you ever been lost though yourself? Have you ever not known where you were? Most people like to know where they are, where they're going, where they've been. My grandparents had this map of Australia with pins in it for all the places they'd ever been. Maybe you've got something like that yourself at home. But look, I remember being lost when I was a kid, especially scary when you're a child, because you don't know how to find your way out of things. And look, we're at the Broken Hill show. I may have said this to some of you before, but we're at the Broken Hill. Broken Hill's where I'm from. A small country town with a small country show, right? It's the tiniest thing. And there's just an oval and there's some you know, carnival rides next to it. And then there's a shed for the little baby chickens and the cake shows. You know, so there we were, though, at night. We went there at night because my dad was in the Army Reserves and he was doing a demonstration, and we wanted to see the fireworks. Fireworks are awesome. And so we're walking along and we're looking at all the things, and we got to the end of the row where it kind of got a bit dark, and there were some rides there that had been shut down. There was a Ferris wheel I could see, and there were some mirrors and sparkling things on the horses. And I'd been holding on to Mum's hand, but I just wanted to go, just look at this one horse, and I wanted over there to look at the horse, and it was beautiful. There were some bright lights shining from the oval, but otherwise it was fairly gloomy. And I turned around to tell my mum about it, but my whole family was gone. Like, not there. And I probably would have been about, I don't know, 6 or 7. And all of a sudden that cheery, carnival, fun family atmosphere turned into a scary nightmare because I didn't know anyone and I didn't know where my family was. And, you know, as an adult now, I know I could have just walked 20 metres and probably found them, but I didn't know where they were, and I got scared and started crying. Look, I was really lucky because I got found by someone nice, you know. A lady said, "What's the matter?" And I said, "I can't find my mummy." So she took me along to the, you know, there's one of those offices that they always have for lost kids, because it turns out it's not so uncommon. And they asked me what my name was, and they put it over the loudspeaker. "Mrs. Bone, please come to the office and get your child." So all of a sudden, half the town knew that my mother couldn't keep track of her child. She was a little ticked off about that. But she came in and she hugged me because she was worried as well. She'd lost her child. It's scary being lost. When my family, when my mum and dad were there, all of a sudden everything was all right. Yeah. You know, we're going to look today at the story when Jesus gets lost. It's in the book of Luke. And, you know, the book of Luke is one of the most complete accounts of the birth and childhood of Christ. Luke tells us that he compiled this account carefully. Have a look, open up when you go to Luke 1. I want to point this out in verse 1 of Luke 1. Luke says, "Many have undertaken to draw up an account of the things that have been fulfilled among us, just as they were handed down to us by those who from the first were eyewitnesses and servants of the word. Therefore, since I myself have carefully investigated everything from the beginning, it seemed good also to me to write an orderly account for you, most excellent Theophilus, so that you may know the certainty of the things you have been taught." By the way, have you ever wondered who Theophilus is? Luke also writes the book of Acts and addressed that to Theophilus as well. What you probably would be surprised to know is that in Greek, Theos is God and Philo is another word for love. So the name actually means lover of God, God lover. So he's writing this to Christians, maybe to someone who's been given that name or taken that name. But what's more interesting to me is that he has carefully investigated everything. And maybe that's why he's got such a complete account of the birth of Jesus. Because he's investigated it. And to do this, he would have had to speak with eyewitnesses, with people who saw what he wrote down. Because he's checked it out. He's done the legwork for us. He's made sure that everything we're reading actually happened. The people who were there, who saw it, they're the ones that he talked to. And he's got this full account, and we don't know who Luke talked to verify some of these early stories about Jesus, but it seems to me there's only really a few people he could have talked to who actually were there. Maybe he even talked to Mary herself. And for me, that's a possibility, but we don't know for sure from the Bible, because that's quite amazing. And for me, it kind of says, we can trust the Bible, because let me tell you, my mum, when someone asks her about me, the first story she tells is not the one where she loses me at the Broken Hill show. That's not the one she tells, because parents don't want to admit that stuff, right? We don't want to tell strangers about how we messed up with our kids. It happens. Now, despite Luke writing the fullest account of the birth of Jesus and his childhood, after his birth and after he is presented at the temple to Simeon and Anna, we don't know anything else about his life until the age of 12. Now, even back in the days when Luke wrote this, people were starting to not believe that Jesus actually existed. This was only a few decades after his resurrection. And people were reading what had happened and going, surely this wasn't a human. Maybe this was just God who'd put on a little puppet show for us. It's called, docetism is the belief that Jesus wasn't human. So this account that Luke puts in is really important to know that Jesus wasn't just God pretending, that he was actually born as a baby and grew up and was a young child of 12 when this story happens. And, you know, it's really authentic because you see the reality of what it is to be a parent. If I ever lost my child, I wouldn't want to admit it. I wouldn't want to tell anyone. But it's worth repeating this story. Mary knows that because of what happens later on. So come with me to verse 41 of Luke 2. Now, just to give you a little bit of background here, we know that Joseph and Mary were good parents. And I want to say that out first, because we're about to talk about how they forgot their son and left him alone in a city. But they were parents who did the right thing. Just before this, they'd taken their son to the temple to be dedicated in accordance to the law of Moses. That's what's supposed to happen. The eldest male belongs to the Lord. God said that in Exodus. The eldest child, the eldest male child is mine. I claim him. That's what he said. The Lord has reserved the eldest male of each child, of each family, to be his own. So they presented Jesus at the temple faithfully. And the next thing you hear, they're going to go to Jerusalem for the feast of Passover. And before you think, well, that's no big deal, they'll just pop in there, you know, from whatever suburb they live in. You know where they lived, right? Where did they live? Nazareth, right? Jesus of Nazareth. Yeah, that's where he's from. Absolutely, that's where he lived. So, well, that's all right. They'll just, you know, if you ask your GPS, in fact, how to get from Nazareth to Jerusalem, it's going to tell you to drive down Isthak Rabin Highway. It's going to take you about an hour and a half. Now, that might not seem like too much of a bother to drop into the temple for Passover one day, but of course, you don't have a GPS and you don't have a car. In fact, if you're lucky, you've got a donkey. How far away is Nazareth from Jerusalem? Well, as the crow flies, it's about 144 kilometres. But they couldn't just walk that way. That way led through Samaria, right? And they didn't want to associate with the Samaritans. So they had to sort of do a little dip around the bottom and go through Jericho to get to Jerusalem. So it's about 190 kilometres. 190 kilometre walk to get there for Passover. So the act of taking their son to Passover, well, it's a long way to go. That's probably from here to what? Here to maybe Melton or so, I'd say. Yeah. If you walk, maybe what, 30 kilometres a day, you'd probably take about a week to get there. And that's a long walk, especially with a 12-year-old. Would have been fit, right, back then? Would have been dedicated. Would you walk for 7 days to go to church? Silence. And of course they had to walk back afterwards, and they were doing it with this child. And the thing is, it's a trip that they did 3 times a year. Yeah, every adult would have had to go to Jerusalem for at least 3 times a year. The Festival of Weeks, Harvest Festival, the Festival of Booths or Tents, and this one, the Passover. And so, you know, most of the people in Nazareth would have been Jews, and so they would have not been walking by themselves. Nazareth probably had about 500, between 500 to 2,000 people living there. So you'd go with your little village. You'd all get up one day and you'd set off together as a group, right? Which I guess explains a little what happens in this story. Let's have a look at verse 41. Every year his parents went to Jerusalem for the feast of the Passover. When he was 12 years old, they went up to the feast according to the custom. After the feast was over, while his parents were returning home, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem, but they were unaware of it. Thinking he was in their company, they travelled on for a day. Then they began looking for him among their relatives and friends. When they did not find him, they went back to Jerusalem to look for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple courts, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. Everyone who heard him was amazed at his understanding and his answers. When his parents saw him, they were astonished. His mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us like this? Your father and I have been anxiously searching for you." "Why were you searching for me?" he asked. "Didn't you know I had to be in my father's house?" But they did not understand what he was saying to them. Then he went down to Nazareth with them and was obedient to them. But his mother treasured all these things in her heart. And Jesus grew in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and men. All right. So we know Jesus, he's coming up of age, you know. He's getting older, so his dad's doing the right thing, taking him to teach him what to do. And I can't imagine that Jesus is one of these tearaway kids, right? He would have been responsible. So I'm assuming that his parents were pretty relaxed about him. They could trust him. It'd be nice to have a child like that, wouldn't it? 12-year-old you completely trust. That'd be great. Does that explain what happens next? Is it because Jesus is really responsible? Or are his parents careless? Because after the festival's done, and it's a 7-day festival, Passover, they would have been there for 7 days. After the festival's done, Joseph and Mary packed up and headed home and completely forgot their 12-year-old son. Has anyone ever done that? Left their 12-year-old somewhere and forgot them completely? I just thought I'd ask. Has anyone ever wanted to do that? Leave their 12-year-old somewhere and just forget them and drive away. Why did they do it? How can this happen? Let's have a look at verse 44. Thinking he was in their company, they travelled on for a day. Now, they thought he was with them. Now, when it says company, it doesn't mean just their company. It means the whole group of them from Nazareth, right? That word's from the same root word that gets translated as synagogue, which means a gathering together. So this is a group of people who are travelling together. In your Bible, it may even be translated as caravan. Now, that doesn't mean they've got the old Jayco out with a donkey in the front. It means a caravan in the old-fashioned sense, a group of people trailing after each other on a journey, a few hundred people at least, together. And they just thought that he was a part of that company. But they were wrong. And I can just imagine it. At some point, they had this conversation. "Hey, where's Jesus?" "Well, I thought he was with you." "Well, I thought he was with you." And who knows? They've travelled for a day. And you know what that says to me? They've got to evening meal time. They've travelled for the day. They've stopped. Time for the evening meal. Let's feed our son. Where is he? He's not here. So the sun's setting and your son's missing, and you're a day's travel away from Jerusalem, the last place you saw him. That would be a nightmare. That would be an absolute nightmare for me. So the searching begins. How can they lose their son? How can they have lost him? Well, they just assumed that Jesus was with them. They didn't check. They both made the assumption that he was a part of their company. And you know, we can't really be too critical of them. We can't compare their behaviour to modern standards and say they're neglectful and send around the Department of Community Services. But in saying that, in all the rush of the festival, packing and leaving, not once did it say that they checked for Jesus or asked where he was. You know, it's easy to miss things in this fast-paced world that we live in. It's easy just to miss things completely, just to be oblivious. Just a couple of weeks ago, pre-Christmas, I'm in the supermarket doing the last-minute shopping. You know what I mean? Like, it's the day before Christmas, and I've got the list from Vanessa. And I've committed to go to the supermarket. And you know what? I actually got a park, which is a Christmas miracle all of its own. I got a park outside the supermarket. I got inside, and I had this list. And I don't know about you, some people are aisle-by-aisle shoppers. But I'm a list shopper. I go from the top to the bottom. Because if I go aisle by aisle, I'm going to miss something for sure. So I go from the top to the bottom. And all right, the next thing I had to go get was in this direction. I had it off, and there it was. And I leaned forward and grabbed it. And I turned around, and I saw someone from Stall Church. I said, "Oh, hi." And she pointed at the woman next to me, who I'd completely ignored. I knew there was some sort of vague figure there as I reached into the fridge. And I turned around and it was one of my church members from Stall looking at me like, what are you doing? Just ignoring me. I was a foot away. She could have slapped me and I would have, you know, I would have been totally surprised. But this is someone that I know really well, that I'd studied with, that I'd done baptismal studies with and baptized only a few months ago. And yet I completely missed seeing her. Have you ever missed something like that? You ever been so distracted you totally just gap it, you blank out, you're gone, you don't know what you're doing. This kind of distraction, you know, is getting worse. And even overseas, there are some people, some cases of people driving to work and forgetting their babies in the car and leaving their baby in the car all day with often tragic consequences. This kind of busyness isn't really anything new, though. We're all guilty of being distracted at some time or another. We get just distracted and things slip our mind and we assume that Jesus is with us. Come with me to, keep your finger in Luke, but come with me to Judges. Judges 16. Someone else who got distracted. Judges 16, verse 20. This is Samson. And Samson was distracted by Delilah. Judges 16, 20 says, then she, this is Delilah, called Samson, the Philistines are upon you. Of course, she'd just gone and gotten them, hadn't she? He awoke from his sleep and thought, I'll go out as before and shake myself free. He's going to use his massive strength to free himself from the Philistines. But he did not know that the Lord had left him. Samson just assumed that God was with him. He just assumed that his strength was always going to be there no matter what he did. But he was wrong, wasn't he? And he was captured. You know, it's easy for us to assume that Jesus is with us in our Christian walk. Look, I go to church. Look, I give tithe. Look, I watch Christian videos and I volunteer. But you know, sometimes Jesus is missing and we don't even notice. In all the busyness of even working for God, in doing what we think God wants us to do, in keeping busy and devout, we just quietly leave Jesus out of what we do. And then we wonder why we're not satisfied with our Christian experience. Have you ever been really close to Jesus? Do you remember what that's like? I'm assuming that you do because you're here. Do you remember that feeling when Jesus is a part of every day? When he's so close to you that when you're in need, he's right there for you to help you. That feeling that he's so close that he's guiding you. That sense that he's with you and feeling you. Do you remember those conversations that you have with him every day where you share what's on your heart, your troubles, the joys, your cares, you share everything with him? Have you ever felt so close to him that you feel his presence nearly every moment of the day? Have you ever had those moments where you see something in his word or in the world and you realize that Jesus is showing his love to you and he's with you? Have you ever had those times in prayer when you would just hum with his presence? Those moments when he would just bless you and you knew it was him. I think we've all experienced that. But maybe we've also experienced slowly leaving Jesus behind. When we just start going through the motions without really noticing that Jesus isn't there. When slowly our prayers have been easing back in frequency because we just assume Jesus is always going to be with us. When our time fills up with other things and our Bible slowly gathers dust on the bedside stand. It's so easy to leave Jesus behind in the day-to-day. For all of us. And I guess what I want to suggest today, what I want to suggest is that while this is a new year and everyone's talking about resolutions to do more exercise or to eat less chocolate, I think there's another thing we're called to do regularly, at least once a year, and that's to take time to reflect, to ponder, we said in our Sabbath school lesson this morning, and to pray on our Christian walk with God. Now, you know, reflection may sound good and it may come naturally for some, But to others it may sound like some kind of voodoo. But Jesus did it. He spent time apart with God in prayer. That's what I'm talking about. Maybe you're not a naturally introspective person, but I know that these questions have helped me before. I'm going to give you some suggestions of questions to think about. I don't want answers. I don't want you to, you know, think, oh, I've got to do this to please God. This is just some things I think are worthy of reflection. All right, question number one. How would I currently describe my relationship with Jesus? You know, no one else can answer that. Even between you and your spouse, no one can ever know what that relationship is really like, except you two. No one else can. No matter how much you sit there for hours and explain and talk and talk and talk, no one is ever really going to know what it's like between you and your significant other. You can't explain it. And it's the same with Jesus. No one is ever going to really know how it is with you and Christ except you. And so you need to think about this. You ask yourself, what things over the last year have drawn me closer to Jesus? And what things have pushed me further away? And you need to be honest with yourself, because no one else is listening. You don't have to tell anyone else, but if we can't be honest with ourselves about our Christian walk, well, we're walking with blindfolds on here. We need to know. And if you think about it and ask God to help you know, you watch, things will start coming to your mind. Lord, what did I do this year that helped me get closer to you? And Lord, what did I do that kept me away from you? What did I do that drove me away from you? And you'll know. But we don't take time for reflection, but we really need to. All right, how does Jesus reveal himself to me in my spiritual walk? Because you know what? He does it differently for each of us, doesn't he? How is my prayer life? Prayer life is a real indicator of your closeness with Christ and with God. Am I spending time reading God's word or not? And you know, so many Bible passages, maybe you think you don't need to. How closely to my goal, do my goals in life match what Jesus wants for me? And what obstacles are in the way of making my life reflect Jesus's more closely? These are the sort of questions that I think worthy of asking ourselves. I don't know if you've ever even taken the time to ask those questions, because it's so easy to lose our walk unless we stop and take a measure. Work out your own salvation with fear and trembling, it says. We need to know where we are with Jesus. Do you know where you even stand with him? I can only imagine the panic that Joseph and Mary must have felt when they realized that their son wasn't with them. They begin a search for Jesus. Where did they look first? Well, it says here, verse 44, then they began looking for him among their relatives and friends. That's the company they're traveling with. Surely Jesus would be with them. And you know what? We do just the same thing. If we start getting an inkling that we are far away from Jesus, we try and find his presence by coming amongst our friends and families at church. And it's so easy to assume that corporate worship must include Jesus, that somehow just by being here, we have Jesus, even if he still feels far away. And we say, look, I'm coming here once a week. Doesn't that show Jesus in my heart? Being among friends and relatives at church to worship is a real blessing. But it doesn't guarantee you Jesus in your heart. It doesn't guarantee you that closeness. They can't find him. What do they do next? They return to Jerusalem. And here's the thing. Do they go straight to the temple where Passover ceremonies occur? Do they go straight there? No. They spend time looking. And you know what? Jerusalem is a big place. It had about 40,000 people living in it, usually. Around Passover, that swelled up to about 250,000 people. Right. So, are they going to be able to find him by a methodical search of 250,000 people? I wouldn't think so. I mean, sure, you go back to the place where you were living, right? While you're there, you go back to where you camped. And to be generous, some of the scholars say that 3 days, we think 3 days, like they got there, then they spent 3 extra days, and then they found him, like on the 5th day over here. But the scholars say, with the Hebrew way of counting days, they arrived back on the 1st day, they searched the 2nd and found him on the 3rd. Now, given the day they'd already travelled, that was at least 4 days that they hadn't seen him. Still, it takes them over a day and a half, at least, to think about checking the temple. They didn't know where he was. They didn't know where to look for Jesus. If you've lost Jesus in your life, where do you start to look? Where do you go? Do you make a fruitless search? They couldn't figure it out because maybe they didn't really know who Jesus was. Maybe they didn't grasp who their child was. At least they didn't yet, but maybe they're about to, because eventually they check the temple, right? And there he is, sitting among the teachers, 12 years old, their boy, giving answers that astonish people. Can you imagine a sight that would have been? And it tells you right here that they were astonished. When he's in verse 48, when his parents saw him, they were astonished. And you know this is a real true story, because Mary doesn't say, "Oh, hail Jesus, who is God's Messiah." He says, "What did you do? You're in trouble," right? That sounds like something my mum would say. "Do you know what you've done? Do you know how worried we've been?" Does that sound accurate, Mum? Yeah, it does, doesn't it? "What have you been doing? You've worried us sick. Why have you treated us like that?" I love it. It's so typically a mother thing to say. But you know what? Although it's his fault, he has an answer. And you know what? What he says here is so much like the words that he says throughout the whole of the Gospels. Because it's accurate, it is wisdom, and it is confounding to Mary. And she goes away pondering it. She says, "Why were you searching for me? Didn't you know I had to be in my Father's house?" They didn't understand what he was saying. They didn't get it. Did they not understand that he was truly his Father's son? Or did they not understand why they should have known where he was? How would you feel if you get told off by your 12-year-old? He's saying, "You should have known. I'm here in my Father's house doing my Father's work. How could you have not known that?" Because you have this child and you know that there were some weird things about his birth and there was an angel and stuff, but for 12 years he's been a pretty good kid, but nothing else. Now this is a reminder, right? This is a reminder about who he really is. That God himself is his Father. He said, "You should have known I was here." And you know what? If we want to find Jesus again, if you feel maybe that's you, if you've lost him, he's saying, "You don't need to search. I'm always here in my Father's temple. You don't have to look for me. You just have to come and do what the Father's asked you to do. When you pray to God, you'll find me. When you give the hungry food and the thirsty something to drink, you'll find me. When you take the stranger in or visit the sick or those in prison, you'll find me. When you do my Father's work, we'll be doing it hand in hand." And all of a sudden, when you do that, you'll realize that it wasn't Jesus who'd left you. It was you who turned your back on him. And he's still standing at that door, knocking, asking to come in and sup with you. And all we have to do is say yes. Yes. So I want to invite you to do that today. If you feel that Jesus has been left behind, if you've searched for him among the church and you've searched for him fruitlessly, you don't know where he is, he's saying, "I'm here, the heart of my Father's temple, the heart of my Father's work, in caring for others. And you can find me again. Just open the door of your heart." Would you like to do that today? I would like to do that every day.